Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Super excited to have with me Dr. Now, I'm going to say Marie Helene, but during the interview, we're going to go MH. Is that correct?
Yes, MH works.
MH works. Dr. Peltier is a, and what I love about the MH, because we're talking about mental health and that sort of the letters that start with the short form of mental health. MH brings a signature mix of business and psychology. Holding a PhD and an MBA, she translates psychology research into strategies professional leaders and their teams absolutely need to thrive. MH shares with what psychologists know, but other professionals and leaders may not. So you're going to hear that here, which is very cool. Specifically, the intersection of high performance and strong workplace mental health. She has over 20 years of experience as a leadership psychologist, executive coach, and senior leader in corporate insurance and government sectors. And she has an award-winning book, The Resilience Plan. And that's what we're going to be talking about is a lot today, is about resilience. It's such a common term, isn't it, when figuring out what it actually means. So her book is The Resilience Plan, A Strategic Approach to Optimizing Your Work Performance and Mental Health. And it was named a top five book to read by Magazine and Forbes. So welcome, MH.
Thank you, Janine. So glad to be here.
It's, and you're coming from the other side of the world, the little of the French accent, but that's not necessarily where you are now. Do you use much French in Vancouver?
I do, actually. There is, because some of the work I do, of course, I work both in French and in English, so there isn't a massively large population of French speaking here, but those who do, they seek me out. And being in Canada, also doing a fair bit of keynotes are both in both languages, that kind of thing. So I do use my French quite a bit.
Excellent. Tell me more about you. So we've heard about your business acronym, but tell me about you. Who are you?
Well, a lot of it comes from this mix, from a professional perspective, this mix of psychology and business, but it comes from sometimes, because, you know, mixing even these two things, they lead to a nice, I find a great combination, and it sounds good now. However, earlier, you know, doing all the psychology training and then turning to getting to business school and doing the business school training was seen by many as, well, number one, why would you do that? And where are you finding the energy or the interest in doing this? And it comes from being a bit adventurous. So I am, that's one of the things that I am. I'm fairly comfortable with some calculated, but still risk. I like to follow my instinct. I like to be creative with ideas and try new things.
I think with psychology for me, and I was on a conversation this morning talking about unconscious and subconscious and conscious minds and that whole process, I find everything fascinating about that. I find it all fascinating. Was that something when you finished high school and said, right, this is something I find, I'll use the word fascinating again, and this is where I want to go? Or it just sort of fell into it, then you went, this is what I like?
I was interested in human behavior. So things that interested me was psychologist. Another area was law in general. Mm-hmm. Decided in the end to do psychology and quite enjoyed it. And it, for me, the draw was realizing how much research we had, how much information was out there. And of course, now this is many years ago when we were not talking about psychology as much as we are today. But realizing the amount of knowledge we have that if more people knew this information, they could stay healthier longer or not suffer as much as otherwise we will if we don't use this knowledge and these tools. And so just seeing the massive opportunity that this was and wanting to be part of bringing this information to all of us.
And it's so important. I really feel there is this mental health. It seems like an epidemic around the world. I'm just seeing so much of it. And I know we're going to talk about resilience because I really want that to be a focus because it's something people throw out. And I'm just generalizing now, but I'm finding that the older generation were, and I'm supposed the word stoic, you know, it's just what it is, get on with it and do it. Whereas now, whether people go, oh, well, I don't have to do that, I can do something differently, but it just seems to be more the mental health seem it's good that we've brought it out into have conversations about it. I think that's such an important factor. But there just seems to be a lot more influences in the world that are causing issues. Is that something that, am I just seeing it, or is it just anecdotal, or that's actually what's happening?
It's a probably, I would say, a complex equation with many variables in it. We've always had, as humans, a physical health and a mental health and financial health, spiritual health, all these other various areas of our overall health. It just showed up in different ways, and we've been discussing them more or less over a period of time. And part of what has happened in the past, it depends by country also. It is around the world, but it's also different countries have made some more movement in some areas than others. But overall, yes, we've talked more about mental health. And so now this does a couple of things. Before, we would perhaps not talk about it, but it was still there. And so people, for example, would sometimes need to be off work for health related reasons, and there would be a depression and also a heart condition. It would only be labeled as a heart condition, so we don't actually know that there was a depression, but there was, right? And so now tends to be picked up better and diagnosed better, and so we will hear about it more, and people, yes, discuss it more also, and so whereas some generations were in grade school and never talked about this, and in many countries, very young children will talk about it now, making it more at the forefront as well. And then, yes, there is also additional challenges that we're experiencing as a planet together. And so, right, the pandemic, for example, or AI that's coming, or certain political tensions that will be felt by many people around the world. And the fact that we have the internet that connects all this, on one hand, positive, on the other hand, making it sometimes harder to have boundaries. And it's not just information, it's what information does to you. So, yeah. So complex equation, right? That probably leads to, yes, we are talking about it more, we're seeing it more, people are coming out with what their personal experience is. And is there more than before? Maybe yes, maybe no. It's hard to tell given all the variables that are in the equation.
Yes, a few things I want to cover within that. One of the things I'm thinking, so, you know, and particularly Canada's the same. Australian soldiers went off to World War One, World War Two, and came back, you know, with possible mental health issues, but they just had to, they had to get on with it. That was just what their beliefs were. They just get on with it. You'll be right, sort of thing. And the other points I wanted to bring up too, my husband was in a job that he absolutely hated, and I kept telling him that stress would cause a heart attack. And eventually it did. And he was fine because he sort of got to the doctors and he kept saying, I didn't have a heart attack, I had a heart condition. Okay. But it was stress. And he now admits and is the first one to acknowledge that it caused that physical ailment, just under a great deal of stress. And but he was always very just get on with it. There's no such thing. That's what his father taught him, and his father taught him, and his father taught him, is that you suck it up, as we'd say here in Australia, and you absolutely get on with it. Whereas my sister had a heart condition, and ambulance called and went to the doctor, and he described it as a broken heart. And I thought, wow, that is very different space, isn't it, that he's actually recognized that it was there was a whole lot of factors that were influencing her that were causing that. And then to send her to a psychologist as well as and to get some assistance as well as getting the physical components fixed.
That's right. It is a combination, right? And we do have research that shows the impact that psychological health can have on physical health and vice versa. And in fact, we also have research showing the impact of financial health on mental, on physical, and the reverse. They're correlated in many ways. And sometimes, more has one area has more influence than the other. But in the end, it's all in the same person. It's all Janine or it's all Marie-Hélène, right? So it's all in one person.
It's fascinating. It had, and so we've mentioned resilient more than once. I have anyway. What is it, and how do you know if you are resilient?
Yes. Well, anyway, we can even link it to that beginning of today's conversation on mental health, right? Our mental health overall is that ability to contribute, whether it's to work, school, or in society in general, and do this in a way that's functioning well for all of us. And so then resilience is our ability to go through adversity, demands, challenges, and come out even stronger. So there is a growth element to this. And there is also another important element is that adversity here, we often think of it as an acute moment, a strong demand, for example. And often it's that, and it's also chronic demands. So just elevated demands over a long period of time also add up, right? And sometimes it's will be a combination of those chronic demands and some acute demands, and at some point makes it very challenging. But you can see how if we and resilience is not a personality trait, it is a state that therefore will fluctuate over time in our lives, but also means we can influence it, right? And so if we do influence it, if we do invest in our resilience, it increases the resilience and that has in itself those positive effects. It also means we're increasing our overall mental health. We're buffering, right, from those demands that otherwise could hit our mental health in stronger ways.
So for people that haven't had a lot of adversity, and then all of a sudden, the world shuts down or something happens like that, then how do they develop coping mechanisms?
Yeah, it's not, we don't necessarily need to have gone through adversity to build that tough skin, for example. We learn from these moments. Yes, we do. But even without this, we actually know from research and practice the kinds of things that will increase our resilience. And it don't require us to be in that adversity and therefore build that skin, for example. And these are areas that we know of. And the challenge is not in knowing, it's in implementing. But these areas, we've heard so much about them in the pandemic, for example. So exercise, and we want three types here. We want cardio, strength training, and meditative type activity, like meditation, yoga, tai chi, things like that. We want to pay attention to our nutrition. We want sleep, and we want time with people we enjoy spending time with, so relationships. So these are the top four. And there are others, time in nature, a volunteer work, investing in our spirituality, if that's part of our lives. So there will be different ways in which we can increase it, ideally proactively when we're doing well.
Some of those, look, there I talk about those things all the time, exercise, get sleep,
Yeah.
drink water. That's one of the things I I run a retreat with a couple of friends, and one of them doesn't drink water. And then when she sees me, she'll pick up a glass and say, "Yes, mummy, I've got my water." But it's those and good nutrition. But it is that also for me, spending time in nature. It's one of the things when I ask people, "What do you do for you? What's your calming place?" I'm working with a gentleman at the moment who has a lot of anxiety over public speaking. It's really intense. So we took him to a place where he just feels calm, which is fishing. Absolutely. And he grew up on the banks of these little rivers in Ireland, and he used to fish with his grandfather. So we're taking him back to those places, and it's changing that level of anxiety because that's finding the calm. So that I imagine being able to do that would help a lot when you're building a base of resilience.
That can be one of those components. It almost connects with that element of meditation, right? That we're talking about here, finding that meditative state so that you can bring it to a different context. And you know that resilience plan, basically, that you will create for yourself may include some of those variables that we were talking about just now. And in different contexts for different people, different moments in our lives and in our career, different things may need to be added. Sometimes someone will need more attention to protecting their boundaries better. Sometimes they'll need more attention to managing their time differently instead of trying to pack in so many things always, giving themselves a bit more time. Sometimes, yes, it'll be an example like this where you're going to say, you know what, I want to tackle this challenge I've had all my life of speaking in front of groups, and how can I improve that and change this? And there are many ways in which you can do this as well. We have great research on that too. So it will vary from person to person. And the important piece is you will want to make sure that you create a plan for yourself on how you're going to do this. Who are you going to work with? When are you going to go to that actual fishing place, or revisit it in your mind to induce that sense of calm, for example? You cannot just say, oh, that's important for me. I hope I do it. And you never have time, you never do it, and it doesn't happen.
And that's a and it's a great reminder, and I think that's a great reminder for everyone listening
I know.
is to find that spot, because we all get involved in the busyness of our lives, and then, oh, I'm meant to be meditating every morning for 10 minutes, or I'm meant to be making sure that I've got the grocery list organized so the food in the house is nutritious for the week and we're not just getting takeaway. And that there's a whole lot of things that just will fall by the way. And then that's when that sense of overwhelm comes in. And then the body and the mind aren't functioning well.
That's right. And that plan will need to be very specific to each of us, right? So what will make the difference for you in terms of, so what do you need to do to say ensure that you're nourishing your body and your mind with healthy foods will perhaps look differently than for me right now. What needs to happen for that to happen? And that will be based on your context versus my context, what's doable for you, given the time you have, for me, given the time I have. And then it needs, so that's why it's not just enough to say, oh, yes, need to eat healthy, huge impact on your psychological health. Everyone knows, or, you know, most people would trust the research that, yeah, that's probably something that would be great. And the way it's going to look like for each of us will differ. And that is where the context is so important. It sometimes the analogy that I give is that of a business analogy, where, you know, if a company had a great idea about how to start a new product, big company or small team or just a N of one, doesn't matter. But you have an idea about a new, you know, very good thing that you want to bring to the market. Do you just say, okay, let's just do it? Or do you stand back for a second and say, okay, who else is offering anything close to this? How much are they charging for it? Who's buying it? What forces in the near future or far future might influence the demand for it? You would do all this, right? Take the context into account. In effect, that's strategy. And so that's what I'm saying for our resilience. Just knowing I've got this great idea, I want to say meditate more. not enough, because life is busy, it's not going to happen. Need to look at your context so that you can land it in a plan that actually works.
Yes, and if you've got a plan that works for you, then there's a lot more chance that you'll stick by it also, right?
Yes. If you follow my recommendations, it
Yeah.
absolutely will, because you're designing it such that your chances of success are 85% and more. So you will scale it down until for sure you can do it.
And that's all part of the plans that you help people put together, and that's part of your book being called The Resilience Plan.
Yes,
That's
it is.
yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. What I and I, you know, when we're all setting up new goals or new process in our lives or working towards steps, what I see mistakes, and I've done this myself, at the times go full jump into trying to do everything at once. And that's usually not a way to have success, is it?
That's right. Too many things. And the thing is, there was a time in our lives often when we actually could say yes to everything and do everything. You think early career where we had perhaps less responsibilities on the personal side. Depends, each person's context is different. But for many people, there will be more responsibilities in their 30s, 40s, and 50s than there were in their early 20s. And also, not to mention the fact that we're younger, brains younger, bodies younger, everything, functions even faster, more efficiently. Point is, things change over time, and so we need to take that into account. And so one of the parts that I find is necessary as we look at how realistically can I incorporate this next important thing in my life. Let's say meditating, which we should. It would be fantastic for all of us. Well, then you want to really be taking into account your current demands. So all the demands on your time right now and your current sources of supply. So what brings you energy? And once you've done this, and I invite that exercise with the book, and we'll put the link to those worksheets because they are,
Definitely.
if you want, in the show notes, because you can do that without the book or with the book. They're very self-explanatory. But that simple exercise looks simple, deceivingly simple, but important to list all your demands. And usually, when I say this to people, they start listing like their top two or three demands at work that they don't like. Great. Then I say, okay, how about top three demands in your personal life? Okay, so down the list a few things that you're like, oh, I have to do this. Okay. Then I say, how about positive demands at work? Things that you actually want, but they are demanding more energy. You need to fill in for someone, but that's a role that you would be interested in moving forward. That's positive, but it's an extra demand. Okay. And you list that here. Same thing on the personal side. You're helping a friend who's moving to a new place or leaving a relationship. You want to do that. You want to do that for your friend. You're happy to do that. And it still represents a demand. So now that you've got this, you have a more realistic perspective on everywhere your energy is going, such that when you're considering adding the next thing, no, we're not going to try to add five new things. We may focus on just one, because realistically now we see it. And realistically, this is what we have time for. So then logically it works better, but also it increases your chances of success, which means then it will increase your sense of self-efficacy, right? Seeing that, oh yeah, okay, I believe I can do this, I'm doing it, it's good, which is now positive, as opposed to, oh, I wanted to do it, I haven't done it, I still haven't done it, I'm not doing it. Not helpful.
Yeah, and we're all good at doing that because there's and that becomes that overwhelm, so you end up not doing anything. Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, and the extreme of that is curling up in a ball and just avoiding everything, isn't it? It's
Just continuing with whatever we've been doing or not doing. Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense. I love that idea of that list all the demands. I'd have a long list.
Right? And then, but then do also
Most
the
things I
list of
enjoy,
supply,
but they'd be all things I enjoy. So
which
I
is,
don't take on a lot of things that I don't like. It's
and that's positive.
yeah.
And it still demands, it almost
It
is
is.
more of a trap, because if it was only things you don't like, you would feel it. You'd be like, oh, I'm so unhappy with all this. It's almost more of a trap when many things are going great. It's all things you want. And then it's almost like we think we cannot burn out of beautiful things we wanted. We can. We are still limited in level of energy we have. So
Absolutely.
to maintain all this, we do want to look at that other column, the supply column. What's going on there? And what can we build even more so that we can keep enjoying those wonderful demands that you've
Yeah,
selected?
absolutely. And when we first got on, we chatted beforehand, and I mentioned that the We Are Women podcast had been going on for 9 years. Now it's a demand on my time. It's not just the interviews here; it's all of the processing of it later, and then getting it out, marketing, and everything that involves, from YouTube to the platforms it sits on. And I love the conversations, so I continue with it. Is it a demand on my time? Definitely. It so I've got to then weigh up, is it worthwhile? And I suppose that's the thing. Is it worthwhile? And so for what I did with the podcast is I have, instead of having a fortnightly interview, I have a three they instead of going live fortnightly, and then they go live every 3 weeks now. So that's actually saved me, about 10 weeks a year of work. And I have them heading away on holidays for 6 weeks, which is probably when this will be live, or probably will be after I get back, but it's all scheduled as well, so everything sits there scheduled and things happen automatically. But it's that setting everything up initially takes the time, but it then takes the responsibility, because it's done, but it's doing a little bit less of it, but still doing it because I love doing it.
What a beautiful example. This, I love it, absolutely love it, because it's almost like we can use this example, the rest of us, and think, okay, what do I have in my life right now that I love? It demands some of my energy, it gives me something, so I want to keep it. And there are other things I also have or want. And therefore, can I scale it differently? Like for you, it required, it sounds like, a moment where you stepped away a bit and said, okay, wait a second. How can I keep this wonderful thing that I've built and I love and carve out a bit more time for myself? Oh, I can change that schedule. I can control that. And you did. Had you not stepped away to do a bit of that reflection, you would have kept going, potentially to a point where you're like, there's no way I can keep doing this. I'm out. And
Definitely.
that would have been it. You and I would never have talked,
There we
unfortunately.
go. Yeah,
See? So just for that. Yeah.
and
But
it does
right? It's
sometimes
that
it's just
deliberate.
yeah, sometimes it's just that small change. And I know when I'm working with a lot of people, I talk to them about the roles that they could pass on to having a virtual assistant or somebody trainee or someone that can help them do the things that they particularly don't need to be the expert in the room to do. And hand things off. But then that becomes that, oh, well, what if they don't do it as well as I do type of thing as well. I imagine that is, well, that's a whole different track, isn't it? That perfectionist sort of space where I can't change things because I'm the only one that can do it.
Yes, and that is an example of what might for some people become part of their resilience plan, right? So if part of what drains my energy is this tendency to say, let me handle it, I will do it, it'll be faster than anybody else, it will be better than anybody else, so I'm just going to take it and just get it done. But then you realize at some point this is not actually optimizing your happiness or your health, right? And so it may become a strategic pillar. Challenging myself, experimenting with not going for A plus all the time. Like life happiness is not about full on optimization of everything. It is probably more about clarity on your values and aligning your choices with your values. In which case, yeah, it may not be done as well, and it does not matter. Pick the ones that need to be an A plus, which maybe you need to keep doing, but not everything needs to be A plus level.
No, I like that. I very much, when we talk about perfectionism, I always question exactly, can you explain to me what that is? And most people can't. They don't know what it means to them. It just, and that it does add a lot of stress to people until they realize that. I love that A plus. I'm going to use that again. It doesn't have to be A plus. It can, yeah.
Can't be A plus on everything. Again, it's I go to back to that realization, because sometimes this desire of doing A plus on everything, it's not out of nowhere. There was a moment in time where you could. So there was a moment, either if you were good in school, it was possible to have A plus most of the time. If you were very efficient at certain things, it was possible to stay longer and get this thing done at the best level possible all the time. You could. It was doable, because at the time you had five things on your plate. You were the only person responsible for these five things, and they were of a much smaller scale than what you have now. So you're using old data to make your decision now. Doesn't work like this. So we want to acknowledge this, because if we just try to say, ah, oh, stop doing this, it's highly unpleasant. Like, you like things to be done well. So number one, acknowledging when there was a time where we could do this on most things. Yay, wonderful. That time's now over. We're now in a different situation. The amount of demands, the size of some of them, the stakes are different. So you have to, but yet you're still a human with 24 hours in a day. So something's got to get somewhere.
How do you fit them in? The funniest thing that just popped into my mind. My sister, when she used to hang washing out, she had to match the pegs. So each item had the same colored pegs on it. And she doesn't remember herself doing it, but she used to be, three young children and trying to get all of the jobs done and everything. But she would have to put the colored pegs on. She doesn't do it now, but it was just a have to thing for her. Because it had to be perfect. They had to look like they're all hanging in a line and all the things together. And for someone who just sort of randomly, I'm rushing, so I'm putting whatever, it was, does it need to be like that?
Well, and the thing, that's it. It worked at the time. It wasn't a problem. She
Yeah.
enjoyed doing it. It's all good. And again, that's the thing. If now there are some areas where perhaps she likes to have things very organized in some areas, that's wonderful. And she probably cannot have everything that organized in 100% areas of life for all kinds of reasons. And probably has learned to, yeah, let go of some of them. Maybe she just doesn't love it, but at some point you have to make choices.
And so her, and I'm referring to her, it's been health choices. So it's her health choices and her husband's health, serious health choices. So, and this is something that, all of this, reaching my age now, I'm very, very adamant about it's all about health. You can fix and replace everything, but if you haven't built so mental resilience, but physical resilience as well, then there a lot more can come at you.
That's right. And there are areas where we cannot control everything, but we can influence things. We can mitigate things. And that's a bit of what we want to consider. And also, there is this element, we've touched on it earlier, in resilience. There are our relationships, right? Spending time with people we enjoy spending time with. And that's another area you've mentioned, for you, for your partner and her partner, your sister. And that's part of it. Resilience is not an individual sport. It's true at work. It's individual, team, and overall organization. And it's true in our personal lives as well. It's our connections, family connections, friendship connections, community connections. That's all part of it as well. And we know this from research. It's not just sounding good. It's a thing. It's established.
I think that's what makes us human. I really do, is those connections that we build. For me, finding what I've always done is found the groups that fill a bucket for me. So I've got all different community groups that I'm involved in, and some will be the people we go away camping with. Now, do I expect them to have conversations like this? No, not at all. It's more, just general sit around the fire and talk rubbish type of conversations. But
And that's
that's all my
perfect. Yeah.
expectation with that. That's fine. And then, they're different groups. And I think that is also a really important part, isn't it? Is not having expectations of other people of roles that they can't fill.
True. Yes, expectations can in so many ways be a trap. And the other piece too is from a resilience perspective, the nature of the conversations we have is not what matters the most. It's spending time with people we enjoy spending time with. So you don't need to put your heart on the table or talk about certain things. You can if you want, you'll get different things from that, compassion, empathy, all those other beautiful things. But just the fact of spending time together is there. But Janine, one of the things that is the trap sometimes, because I'm pretty sure most people, yes, we value those people that we love around us and know that we feel so good when we spend time with them. The trap is protecting that time. It's the sometimes things get busy, obligations pile up, and you and I were supposed to have lunch or a Zoom call to just catch up and, check in. And I send you a notice, I can't do it. I'm really overwhelmed with work. Don't do that. Protect these times that you have booked with a friend. Protect them the same way you would protect an appointment with a specialist that you've waited 6 months for. Protect these. Yeah, there will be some exceptions. I realize that. But don't let them go too quick. Oh, it's just us. It's just a friend. It's just, I can push that. No, it's part of your resilience plan. That's part of what's good for you, what's good for the other person too. And so let's protect it even more.
I love that. I'm the organizer. I'm the one that'll go, oh, I haven't heard from someone for a while, and yeah, and make contact. And my husband says, will say, you're the one that does all the work. And I was, well, it's someone has to do it, and I want to meet them. So end of story. I'm happy to
It's
do that.
happening.
Yeah, and everyone will go, oh, I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance. Thank you for organizing this. It's what they needed. As well. Yeah, it is so important to do that. I was in a general manager's role, a GM of sales for a multi-million-dollar company for 20 years. And in Australia, we have very good long service. We have 4 weeks holiday a year, and we have 10 weeks long service that we're given after 10 years. So I had a lot of paid holiday time. When I left there, I had nothing left because every year I took my holidays. And there were other people there that had, 40 weeks due to them. And I'd say, I'll take yours. But I made sure, even though I was in a senior management role, that I prioritized, because new adventures and freedom are very, very high in my values. That so I prioritized that time. And it was now looking back, I've gone the memories that that created and the stories and the joy, it shouldn't have been missed. But I know these other people have been in those positions just as long, and they're not creating that. Maybe they're not as high on their values as it is for me, but it was so important that I took that time.
Yes. Well, and see, just being who you are and the work you had done probably on yourself led you to having that clarity on your values and that deliberate stepping back again and making that decision, right? Had you not made that decision, surely there were things to keep you there and keep you busy all
Oh,
day,
yeah,
every day,
definitely.
right? And
It was,
so for some people,
yeah. It was a matter of delegating, which was, really tough to go, well, I have to hand it over to somebody. But it was also, there's work to do before we go. And at the moment, I'm planning the 6 weeks. The amount of scheduling and preparation I have to do to be mostly disconnected with the world for 6 weeks is quite significant. But it's worth it.
it's beautiful. Good for you. And see, as your listeners are here with us today, listening to this and how, in effect, like we said, and that's another worksheet I have actually in my book. And it's funny, everyone, her and I is the first time we're talking, but
Yeah.
lots of alignment, obviously. I mean, it's based on research, which we're both familiar with. But I do have a worksheet that is about clarifying your values for yourself. Because as you're going to create your own strategic, customized resilience plan, it gets customized because we're connecting it to your values. And once you have this, then it guides decisions, even those that may be a bit tough in some ways, delegating when usually you're front and center and all this, because it's connected with your value, it will help you push forward. And that's an important part.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I've been neglecting for myself, I've always exercised, I've always walked. I've walked. I used to visit every country town in Queensland, and I've walked around every town, always made time for it. But I've got a heel injury and I'm not walking. And I'm really noticing that I'm more fatigued, which, becomes a bit of a, and I'm not fatigued compared to most people, but for me, I'm just noticing it. And it's because I'm not putting that time aside to do that. I'm still doing yoga and stretches and things, but I'm not doing that, which I know brings me energy. And
Yes.
also walking in, we have a lot of nature here, walking in nature as well. So, and I've actually highlighted when you said protect your time, I've underlined it and put an asterisk next to it as well, because that's something I'm just will have to make sure, even with the injury, that I find that alternative and make the time to do it.
And maybe in this situation, just an idea as we were talking, because that's the way we need to get creative, right? So in this situation like this, where, okay, you used to be a walker, right now the heel needs to heal. And so therefore, but that meant physical activity and outside in nature. Okay. So can you protect the time? And that gets challenging, you're right, because if we're used to walking, then you go walk, and that's the time. If we're not walking, it's not like we sit home and say, well, I used to have this half hour, I'm just going to sit here. No, you keep doing other things. Well, maybe it's sort of getting back that time and saying, you know what? Love nature. I'm going to go find a bench somewhere where I can sit and just be with the trees and the wind. Okay. And I'm going to find another way to bring, say, some kind of cardio work for me. Can I go to the pool? Can I go to the gym and just be on a bike for a moment? Not my preferred thing, but it would bring me back a bit of that cardio that otherwise I can't get, for example. So reprotecting that time, yes. And I'm using this example because for each of us, it will show up in different ways. And it's through that stepping back, noticing what used to make us feel so good. And if that exact thing is not available to us right this second, okay, don't just let it go and go work. Cannot do this, replace it. Let's be creative.
Yeah, I love that, and I've been avoiding just getting, for me, saying you're being lazy, but I know I'm not. But it's just been an avoidance of figuring. I've got a pool in the backyard. I'm sitting here looking at it at the moment. It's summer in Queensland. It just
You've
enjoy
got an
it.
option.
I've got an option. I just can't get my hair
Okay.
wet.
Well, that can be figured out. You and I
That's
can
a different
talk.
thing. A whole different thing. That's just a banner. It looks, yeah. The One of the things that I read in your notes is people think they're resilient, or women think they're resilient, but they're not, and they don't really feel that the need. Well, I'm okay. I can cope with that. I don't need to figure out or read your book. I don't need to do that. You come across that?
Well, by the time they're looking at my books, sometimes they're saying yes, I do. Because the thing is, it's a the we tend to think of resilience almost like, yeah, as a personality trait. I'm like this. Look at all the things I've done so far that have clearly demonstrated a high level of resilience. So that's who I am. So MH, don't need a book. And what we now need to stop and say, wait a second, it is not a personality trait. Part of what allowed you to go through all of these things in the resilient way you did is often, if we look at actually what was there, you had in your context protective factors. You were, in fact, supported by great people. You were, in fact, exercising. You were taking care of yourself. You were 10 years younger, whatever. There were things that were contributing to all of this being possible. And it's not an infinite source here. You're dealing with more demands now, and you will, and it's wonderful, and you need to fill the tank, right? So that's where the book comes in. The book also usually comes in where there is this clarity, either because they've seen people burn out around, or they've seen it from where they are, and they're like, okay, I don't want that. So, but I cannot think of how I'm going to do anything else for my resilience because I have 0 minutes. I don't have time. And I would love to do all these things, but I don't have 3 hours a day to exercise, meditate, and all the things. So that's where being strategic comes in and allows you to, in fact, yes, create your customized plan that gives you that sense of control and agency because you are doing implementing these actions.
Yeah, no, I love that. That I've loved where our conversation has taken us. It's been terrific. If we've looking at three takeaway points, as we usually do for people that you want them to particularly remember, what would they be?
Well, first, I would say, even before I say this, if there was anything that spoke to you in this conversation that made you think of an action you could take above anything, I would say do that thing. Do it. Because that, if it came to your mind, that means either you've done it before, you've thought about it, it's relatively easy and doable. And that's that lower hanging fruit that is going to be the most powerful thing. So I would say do that. In addition, I would say three things. We very much want to keep in mind that resilience is not something we can just decide to have. You cannot just will your way to, oh yeah, I will be resilient. You need to invest in it. It doesn't just appear. You have to take action. Another thing and I think we've covered that it's important is that it's not a one size fits all. What you need to do right now is different from what I need to do right now. And what you and I need to do right now is probably different than what we will need to do in 6 months from now. Because
Right.
it's context dependent. So we want to keep that in mind. It's not just a one solution for everyone. And so it connects with this that we want each of us to have a customized resilience plan so that, and you learn to do it once, it's very easy to then update it for the future. But again, it functions like strategy in a business. You create a strategic plan, it's not done in forever. You will need to evolve it over time when things change or when you've reached your goals. It just functions the same way. And it makes instinctive sense when you actually dive into it. Not complicated, very doable, but then actually puts control back in your hands.
Yes, I really like that. And recognizing that it is different for everybody, but it changes as well. And as we go through time, it changes. For me, there's priority spending time with grandchildren, but I'm not parenting them on a daily basis. It's a very different space. It's it becomes a lot more of the joy, fun part than the parenting part. And
Wonderful.
if you've got kids and you're thinking, oh, this is really hard, just wait till they get a little bit older. It's why
Words of wisdom here.
we have children and bring us grandchildren and that joy that they bring. How can everyone get in touch with you, download a copy of the book? You mentioned some worksheets as well.
Yes, you can go to theresilienceplan.com. It will bring you to everything I do, the book, my website, everything. We'll probably put the link in the show notes. And LinkedIn, always a pleasure to connect with people, see what you're interested in, and have conversations. So you can find me there as well.
And that's how we connected, was on LinkedIn, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's LinkedIn's one of those places where I teach people how to set up their profile so that you can find and have conversations with, and connect with people that will be of value to your network, as you've been a great value to myself and my listeners today by sharing your expertise. Thank you so much for
Yeah.
that.
And yours to mine. So you're welcome. Thank you. It's been wonderful.
And that's another conversation of the We Are Women podcast. I've so enjoyed my time with Dr. MH Pelletier. I hope I pronounced that correct. Very good.
Perfect.
And yes, everything will be in the show notes if you want to download information. Is it an audio book as well? Just
Yes, there is, with the accent and all. Yes.
perfect, because I love listening to audiobooks. I usually have about
Me
three
too.
books going at any one time, but there's always an audiobook as well as the physical books. So perfect. And remember to go to JeaneVosper.com, book a strategy call if there's anything that you want answers on. And I guarantee if I can't help you, I have got a large group of people that I can put you in touch with that might be able to help you be successful and create the best business health, mental health, emotional health, spiritual health, financial health, whatever it is. There are amazing women around the world that can assist you, and I'd love to be able to share that. If you're listening to this, then go to Jeanine Vosper on YouTube and become a subscriber. That way you won't miss a single episode either, or subscribe on your favorite podcast channel. Have a fantastic day, week, month, wherever you might be in the world. I'd love for you to join me next time on the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Jeanine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.